Thank you for you to be here, and thank you for the invitation, in particular for Mike Thome. We send me many letters because I did not answer, and after some moment I decided to come. Thank you. I apologize about the language that I will speak, but I think it's a good average of the official language of Canada, which so it's not so bad. So I want to present some recent results which answer to, well, okay, that is not possible here, to some conjecture by Jacob Pallis. So you take any compact manifold and you consider any diffeomorphisms. The theorem asserts that you can approximate in the C1 topology F by some GN, such that we have two possibilities. Either GN is Morse male or GN has a transverse homoclinic intersection. So I have to mention that this result has been first proved in dimension 2 by Pujas and Sambarino, who prove indeed a much stronger result in, on two manifolds. Then, in last May, I got with Xiao Bogan and Lan Wen the result in dimension 3, and it just we need 1k more for finishing in greater dimension, and Sylvain Crovisier succeed the last argument finishing the proof. So first some comment on the, about the statement. Let's recall for non-specialist dynamical systems what is Morse male. Morse male are the easier, the simplest dynamics. A diffeomorphism is Morse male if the non-wandering set is finite and is done by hyperbolic periodic orbits. So on all the invariant manifolds are transverse. So it looks very much like gradient-like diffeomorphisms. That is, in this picture, every orbit is going down to an attractor, and the basin of attractor are separated by the invariant manifold of the saddles. The other part, the other term of the theorem is about homoclinic intersection. So homoclinic intersection is a very simple thing. You have some periodic point, you look at its stable with two stable manifold, and you look at an intersection between unstable and unstable manifold. So in the end of the 19th century, Poincaré noticed that this simple configuration implies a very difficult configuration of the global invariant manifold, just because of the invariance. And then, a little bit later, Birkhoff proves that any transverse homoclinic point is approximated by an infinite sequence of periodic orbits. And finally, a good explanation of this phenomena has been given by Smale in the 60s, proving that the homoclinic intersection have a good description by the Horst show, and so that is the beginning of the all the hyperbolic theory describing chaotic dynamics. So in particular, this very simple phenomena, which is robust because we have transverse intersection between two manifolds which vary continuously with the dynamic, this very simple phenomena implies robustly chaotic dynamics. So let me restate the theorem in another way. You look at all the Morse male diffeomorphisms. So as Morse male diffeomorphisms are structurally stable, this is an open set. You look now at the set of diffeomorphisms having a transverse homoclinic intersection. As I just told you, the transversality gives you that this set is open. These two sets are clearly disjoint because homoclinic intersection implies infinitely many periodic orbits. And so the theorem tells that the union of these two disjoint open sets is dense in the set of all diffeomorphisms for the C1 topology. So this tells that for the C1 topology, the homoclinic intersections are the unique responsible of the chaotic dynamics. We have dichotomy, very, very simple dynamics, or homoclinic intersections. So I think it's a very elementary statement. That is the oldest result on chaotic dynamics given by Poincaré in the end of the 90s is the unique chaotic phenomena for the C1 topology.
Can you say that if you take a diffeomorphism with zero entropy, then it can be approximated by Morse Mann? Is it part of this feature?
I guess the answer is yes, but I'm not sure. Yes, in so on surfaces, yes, but. Well, so this result is very elementary, but its proof is not at all. So let me state what are the ingredients we will use. Some ingredients, there are more. So ingredients in the proof is our first Kupka-Smale theorem, the classical Kupka-Smale theorem, that is hyperbolicity of periodic orbits and transversality of the invariant manifold of periodic orbits. We also use Conley's theory, that is construction of filtration associated to the chain recurrent set, that is the set of points which are you can go from the point to itself by pseudo orbits. And so the Conley proves that if you look at the chain recurrent classes, you can separate them by filtrations. Then we use many lemmas about perturbation of orbits. The first of them is due to Charles Pugh here, Pugh-closing lemma. We also use its generalization by Hayashi, the Hayashi connecting lemma, and we use some generalizations, some of them by Malsef and Crovizier, others by Arnaud and Wen. We also use the classical shadowing lemma for hyperbolic sets, but also generalization by Malnier and in particular by Liao, which are some shadowing lemma associated to dominated splitting, more or less. We also use perturbation of the derivative along periodic orbits. That is, we look periodic orbits and we allow to make some small perturbation of the derivative at each point of the periodic orbit. That is possible by Frank Lemma. And the result, so what interests us in general is to know how varies the eigenspaces of the derivative of the periodic orbit at the period. And more or less, when there is some continuity of the eigenspaces and eigenvalues of the derivative of the periodic orbits, this means that we have some uniform weak hyperbolicity like dominated splitting or partial hyperbolicity. And finally, we will use result on partially hyperbolic sets, and in particular, the existence of locally invariant center manifolds, which has been done by Hirsch, Pugh, and Schwab. Okay. So it's not an elementary result, but it's not a hard result. It's a very natural, there are simple arguments. And let me begin to present the most naive idea of the proof. It's a wrong idea, but we will follow it. So, assume that you have two periodic orbits, two hyperbolic periodic orbits, which have the same index and which are saddles. And assume they are very, very close. So, as they are very, very close, you can hope that the stable manifold of X will cut the unstable manifold of Y, and conversely, the unstable manifold of X will cut the stable manifold of Y. So we get a cycle between X and Y. So we tell that X and Y are homoclinically related, and then we get homoclinic intersections because X and Y belong to the same basic set. So clearly, this idea is not true. So what are the problems for this idea? The first problem is that without extra hypotheses, we have no control of on the size of the invariant manifold. So maybe you have X periodic orbits and some sequence of periodic accumulating on X. So, but even if this point is very close to X, if we have no control of the size of the invariant manifold, we will have no intersection between the invariant manifolds. The second problem is if we have no control on the geometry of the invariant manifold, the same appear. Maybe this point has very long stable and unstable manifold, but it can be as close as you want at X. You can imagine a way that we have no intersections. So for solving this problem, we need to get many periodic points. We need that these points are very close. We need to control the geometry of the invariant manifold, and finally, we need to control the size of the invariant manifold. So that is the scheme of proof. So how we control all that? So there is a context where everybody knows how to control the invariant manifold. It's the hyperbolic setting. I recall that for you. You take any hyperbolic set, then we know that at every point we have a large local invariant manifold, and that they form a continuous family, so the geometry is uniform. So, furthermore, we know that there are plenty of periodic orbits because if you have an hyperbolic set, you have many close pseudo-orbits, and any pseudo-orbit is approached by two periodic orbits. So we have many periodic orbits in these in the neighborhood of the hyperbolic set, and these periodic orbits have the same hyperbolic structure than lambda. So we get that we get periodic orbits with large stable and large unstable manifold and with a good geometry, and so we get that they are homoclinically related. So, in particular, we will use this very easy statement. So, if you assume that we have a diffeomorphism which has no homoclinic intersections at all, if you look at a minimal set, then either this minimal set has a periodic orbit, or it cannot be hyperbolic. If it was hyperbolic, it will be approached by periodic orbits which are all homoclinically related, so we will have homoclinic intersections. Okay. So indeed, we will use the non-hyperbolicity of, well, no. We will use a minimal set which are not periodic orbits, and so the first step of the proof is to prove the existence of such minimal set which has no periodic orbit. So maybe, I don't know if there is an elementary proof of this statement. Indeed, I use a strong result for this statement at one place, but it seems so easy that maybe there is an easier proof. So I look at F, on I will put the term C1 generic, which means that I take F in some residual subset. Well, and so I take a generic diffeomorphism which is not Morse-Mail, and the statement tells that there exists some true minimal set which is not a trivial one, that is, which is not a periodic orbit. So for the proof, has F is C1 generic, in particular, it is Kupka-Smale. Kupka-Smale means that all the periodic orbits are hyperbolic and we have transversality of the invariant manifolds. So if the non-wandering set was finite, it was Morse-Mail. So if it is not Morse-Mail, then the non-wandering set is infinite. Now, as I take F C1 generic, the pure closing lemma which allow to create periodic orbits tell us that generically any diffeomorphism at his non-wandering set, which is the closure of the set of periodic orbits. As this set is infinite, this one has to be also. Okay. So now we have plenty of periodic orbits. So first, what happens if we have some homoclinic intersection? Because here I do not assume that there are no. If we have an homoclinic intersection, it has to be transverse because F is Kupka-Smale. So we have a basic set. And inside the basic set, that is a shift, there are plenty of minimal sets without periodic orbits. So assume now that we have no homoclinic intersection. So the homoclinic classes of all periodic orbits are trivial. But now, it's at this point that I use a very non-trivial result. Generically, a chain recurrent class which contain a periodic orbit is equal to the homoclinic class. So, here, as the homoclinic class are reduced to be the periodic orbit, we get that any periodic orbit are chain recurrent class of F. But now it's easy to see that these chain recurrent classes are isolated, just because in the neighborhood of a periodic orbit there are no dynamic remaining close to the periodic orbit. Maybe there are dynamic going out and coming back, but there are no dynamic remaining close. So we get that proves that each periodic orbit is an isolated chain recurrent class. But the periodic orbit has to accumulate somewhere because there are infinitely. So I look at the non-wandering set and I remove the periodic orbit. Each periodic orbit is open in that. So I get here a non-empty compact set which is invariant and which has no periodic orbit. So now any minimal set inside this set is a minimal set without periodic orbit. Okay. So now I have minimal set. Yes. Here I use a stronger fact, and maybe this fact at this place we can remove the use that, of that. Here I use that generically a chain recurrent class which contains a periodic orbit is equal to the homoclinic class of that periodic orbit. And that shows the generalization of Hayashi connecting lemma for pseudo orbits. So that is really non, here it's really non-elementary, but maybe there is a simpler proof of that. Oh, yes. Yes. So here, first we use a closing lemma, and here we use a connecting lemma and generalizations. Now I will. So that I'm not sure that it is a deep result. I call that a lemma. Now I will present a very deep result by Lan Wen. And indeed, it has been the motivation of, we have been inspired by this result for the proof. So it considers a minimal set, which is not trivial, and we assume that we cannot create homoclinic intersection by C1 perturbations. So in terms of my first notation, I define O2 to be the set of diffeomorphisms with homoclinic intersection. I'm just assuming that F is not in the closure of this set. So if we cannot create homoclinic intersections, then any minimal set which is not a periodic orbit indeed is partially hyperbolic. That is, it's the tangent bundle over lambda is split in a strong stable, a strong unstable, and a center direction. And the center direction, furthermore, has dimension 1. So it looks a miracle. So I will just give some, not some idea, it's some idea of the proof, but certainly it's harder than that. So first of all, once more using Pugh closing lemma, we know that we can create periodic orbits by arbitrarily small C1 perturbation of F, and this periodic orbit will be very close to lambda. That is, so we have a sequence of diffeomorphisms converging in the C1 topology to F, and each of these diffeomorphisms has a periodic orbit. And if you look at this set, this periodic orbit has compact sets. So you, on the set of compact sets of the manifold, we have the Hausdorff distance, and this periodic orbit converges to lambda for the Hausdorff distance. Okay. So that is the first, we have plenty of periodic orbits, but now we look at all these periodic orbits, and this has we can assume G to be Kupka-Smale, so these periodic orbits are hyperbolic. So we have on each of them a splitting on stable and unstable. And we look at if this splitting is uniformly dominated when n go to infinity. And if this splitting is not dominated, then making small perturbation in a neighborhood of the periodic orbit when succeed at creating homoclinic tangency and then transverse homoclinic intersections. So this tells that these periodic orbits, if you look at the splitting stable unstable, he has to I'm not telling that it is uniformly hyperbolic, but this splitting is uniformly dominated when n go to infinity. As it is uniformly dominated, this dominated splitting induce on lambda a dominated splitting. It go to the closure and go to the limit, and for that I need that this periodic orbit converges to lambda in the Hausdorff topology, so that the splitting is not just on some limit, some third part of lambda, but on the whole lambda. Now, as we have one dominated splitting, we can look at all the dominated splitting we have on lambda, and indeed there is a notion of the finest dominated splitting, and we look at this splitting. And now, there is very complicated these times. The statement of Liao selecting lemma, I think, is more than two transparencies or three transparencies. It's very technical statement, but it's very useful, and it's a generalization of the classical shadowing lemma. More or less, with the help of the dominated splitting, you look at what are the non-uniform bundles in the dominated splitting. And if we have many oscillations of the derivative, you use that to create close to that periodic orbits with a large stable and large unstable manifold, and so we get homoclinic intersections. So that is the structure of the idea of one result, is to look at how the minimal set is approximated by periodic orbit of perturbations, and to use the perturbation of this periodic orbit to get the splitting, and so. And finally, to use a shadowing lemma for creating some hyperbolic basic set close to lambda. So this result is a deep result. So let me summarize what we get. So I look at a diffeomorphism which is C1 generic and which is not Morse-Mail or which has no Mauchly-Nick intersection. Indeed, I want to get a contradiction with that. We have C1 generic and not Morse-Mail. Hence, we know that there is a minimal set there which is not a periodic orbit. And we also know that it is not hyperbolic. So Lanswein's results prove that, indeed, this minimal set is partially hyperbolic with the center bundle as dimension 1. Furthermore, once more using Pugh closing lemma, we know that it is accumulated by a periodic orbit in the Hausdorff distance. So we have plenty of periodic orbits which remain close to the minimal set. So they have the same in the neighborhood of this minimal set. We always have this partially hyperbolic structure with one-dimensional center direction. So that is nice, because we solve one of our problems. We have a good geometry of the invariant manifold. So we have many periodic orbits. And for each of these periodic orbits, if we look at the stable manifold, so we have two cases. Each periodic orbit, its stable manifold will be either tangent to the strong stable plus the center, or just to the strong stable. That are the two possibilities. And the unstable manifold, in that case, is tangent to the strong unstable direction. And in the other case, the unstable manifold is that plane tangent to the center direction and the strong unstable direction. So for all these periodic orbits, which remain close to this minimal set with partially hyperbolic structure, we have a very nice continuous geometry of the local stable and local unstable manifold. So as I told you, for creating a Mauchly-Nick intersection, I need two ingredients. I need a good geometry of the invariant manifold and the size of this invariant manifold. So now, for the moment, we solved the problem of the good geometry. Now we have to solve the problem of the size of the invariant manifold. Okay. So that is one result. And when you look at the finite dominated splitting, if the which is really center one is at dimension 2, and you cannot split more, you create a Mauchly-Nick tangency. If you have two which are one dimensional and both of them are not uniform, that is precisely for that which is done the Liao selecting lemma. You use the non-uniformity of one to tell the other has to oscillate. And as it oscillates, you create points with good hyperbolic times positively and negatively. And this implies at this moment that it is approximated by a periodic point with a large stable and large unstable manifold. And then you create Mauchly-Nick intersections. But that is a deep point of Wen's result. So, as I told you, now we are in a context where we have a good geometry of the invariant manifold and we want to control the size of the invariant manifold. So, let me look at the different possibilities we have. Exactly as you asked me, the center direction is one-dimensional. So, it remains three possibilities. So I fix some size delta uniform, and I want to know if it is I will tell that something is large if it is larger than delta. So we have periodic orbits which has short. I will just look at this case where the unstable manifold, that is the center direction of x, is unstable. So here is the case where we have a short unstable manifold. Here is the case where we have a large unstable manifold. But as we have a one-dimensional center direction, we have an extra possibility with that it is short in one direction and large in the other. So here I will tell large at the left. Okay. And so if we succeed at infinitely many points which are large, with a large unstable manifold, we are done. Just because we have a control of the geometry of this manifold, if we know that we have a large unstable manifold, the stable here is a strong stable, so it's uniformly large for any all the periodic orbits. So we will have at an accumulation point of point x with a large unstable manifold, we will have homoclinically related periodic orbits, so homoclinic intersections. So if we have infinitely many of that case, we are done. Clearly, if I present this one, it's because I didn't succeed at so good result. And indeed, with Wen and Gan, we just succeed at the third case in dimension 3, and that is the case that gives Sylvain Crovisier. So you look at a diffeomorphism without homoclinic intersection, which is C1 generic. You consider a minimal set having a partially hyperbolic splitting with one-dimensional center direction. Then there exists some delta on some sequence of periodic orbit converging to our minimal set, which have the third case, that is their unstable manifold is large but just in one direction. Okay. Let me give an idea of the ingredient of the proof of Sylvain. The main ingredient, no, there are two main ingredients. The one ingredient he used are locally invariant center manifold, which has been proved by Hirsch, Pio, and Schub. My picture is bad, so I will try to make it better here. When you have a partially hyperbolic structure on lambda, so you so at each point of lambda, you there are curves making a continuous family of curves. These curves are not really tangent to the center bundle in the neighborhood of lambda, but at each point x, the curve is tangent to the center bundle at the point x. So we have this curve, sigma x. And now if you look at x on f of x, you can look at the image of the curve sigma x. And we could hope that it is invariant, it will be perfect, but it is not. If you look at sigma x, it is not sigma of f of x. But there is a uniform, so here is epsilon. If you look at the segment of size epsilon here through x, then each image will be a segment inside the image. So that is f of what I call sigma x epsilon. So it's why we call that not invariant center manifolds, but just locally invariant center manifolds. The second ingredient used in that proof is that in these center segments, you cannot have intervals which are all contained in the chain recurrent set. That is hard stuff I will not explain. And finally, what has done Sylvain, a very tricky idea, is to induce an abstract dynamic on the product of lambda by the interval minus epsilon epsilon using these locally invariant manifolds. So you look at the union of all these locally invariant curves. You take the disjoint union. So the disjoint union is the product of lambda by a segment. And you have not a globally defined dynamic on this set because they are not invariant, but they are locally invariant. That is, if you take a small segment center at zero, then f then send the segment x times minus epsilon epsilon in the segment f of x times minus 1, 1. So we get an abstract dynamic. And in this abstract dynamic, she proves that, so assuming that no one of this of the segment in the fibers are chain recurrent, that is, they are not because of the lemma, then you have an attracting region. As you have an attracting region, you have segments which are chain uniformly in a smaller segment. On this fact, she induced that on the periodic orbit close to lambda, and it gets this periodic orbit with an half large stable or unstable manifold. Okay? So now I will finish the proof. How to deal with not large invariant manifold, but just large at the left. Okay, so we have these orbits, which have large. Oh, I forget something in the statement of Crovizier's theorem, which is important. It's not only it proves that we have periodic points with large unstable manifold on one side, but we have periodic orbits such that at each point of this periodic orbit, the invariant manifold remains large on the same side. This means, because in general, you have periodic orbits such that at some moment of the time, the unstable manifold can be very small, and after it became large, iterating, and iterating more, it comes back to be small. And here, the unstable manifold remains large all the time. That is a very important point for now for finishing the proof. So I have this periodic orbit such that any point in this periodic orbit has large unstable manifold at the left. So now we have periodic orbits which approximate some minimal set which is not a periodic orbit. Hence, the period of this periodic orbit go to infinity. So this periodic orbit is done by many, many, many points. On a compact manifold, there are two of them which are very close. If you take in this set of points, this big set of points, the infimum of the distance, when n goes to infinity, this distance goes to zero. So I take two points which are very, very close, x and y, in the same orbit. Well, now each of them has a half-large unstable manifold. So, for example, if on this picture y don't look very at the left of x, but it's because of the three-dimensional picture. But so, if y is at the left of x, as x has a large unstable manifold at the left, the strong stable manifold of x will cut the unstable manifold of x. As x and y are on the same orbit, we got an homoclinic intersection. So that is a good case. Another good case is the other case. If X is at the left of Y, okay, so this time at Y has a large unstable manifold at its left, the strong stable manifold of X cut this unstable manifold, and we also get an homoclinic intersection. But there is a third case. The third case is where when Y is at the right of X, and X is also at the right of Y. So that is that case. We have 2 points, very close, the invariant manifold are both large at the left, but the strong stable manifold of Y pass at the right of this unstable manifold, and the same for the strong stable manifold of X. So in that case, we have no directly homoclinic intersection. So what we have done here is a perturbation lemma. We consider X of Y, which are the closest point in the orbit, and we prove in that case that first, this small distance here is indeed very, very small in comparison to these two distances there, and we also prove that this orbit is not passing in the neighborhood of this segment. So that is, in this segment, if we make a small perturbation, we have a good control of what happened to the strong stable manifold and the strong unstable manifold of the orbit. So this, indeed, was our argument. And so we prove that by a C1 perturbation, we create an intersection between the strong unstable manifold of X with the strong stable of X, creating a homoclinic intersection. So this ends the proof of the theorem. What? Yes, okay. Let me explain that. So we have infinitely many orbits like that. Yes, so the distance goes to zero. And we take X and Y being the smallest one, the closest one, yes? So first, the distance goes to zero. So you have two, the strong stable and strong unstable are like that. But there are continuous bundles, so they are almost constant. So they cannot be like that, they are like that. So, okay, so you see that the distance is very close here. This distance is very, very close, it's very small, very small, yes? Furthermore, this distance here, in the blue one, is almost the same as the red one. Why is that? Because if you look at, in that direction, in the center direction, you look at a rectangle, and if it is very thin, that is the blue is very smallest, iterates negatively, it becomes larger, the other becomes smaller, and you have no more. So this decreases. This increased, but it was almost zero. So it's not important that it increased, but this one decreased. So the distance between these 2 points decreased, and there was the smallest one, the closest one. So the distance are almost the same. It's almost a square, not a rectangle. Now, if you assume that this orbit go close to this point, either it's at the right or at the left, or it has the same position with these 2 ones, contradicting the fact that it was a closest one. So, okay. It's a square, yeah. So for the topic of my talk, I finished. And I wanted to use, to ask you a question. Normally, when I finish, you ask me a question, but I want to ask you a question. Indeed, well, for the moment, in C1 generic dynamic, we are making a lot of progress on some global picture beginning to appear. And it remains one difficulty that I think I'm not competent at all for beginning this difficulty. And I think that most of people working of the field, don't think that it's important, but I think it's one of the most important remaining difficulties for giving a global picture of C1 generic dynamics. So I put you some homework. The problem is done. So it's we consider on the segment on the 0,1, we consider two functions f on g, which are expanding map, usual hyperbolic expanding map, so f on G. So maybe that. So we have F on G, which are two Markovian expanding map. So we get lambda F on lambda G, which are contour sets, which are the maximal invariant sets in the domain of definition of f of g. So, and we assume that lambda f intersects lambda g. And the question is simply, can we make a C1 perturbation of these two maps in order to disjoint the dynamically defined contour sets? So, that has been studied in the C2, C1 plus what you want topology. But for the C1, it's unknown. And more or less, this will decide if there are robust tangency on surfaces. In higher dimension, it will tell us if robust tangency, we know that there exists robust homoclinic tangency, but they are always related with heterodimensional cycle, and so it will decide if. For me, that is the difficulty. I have no idea how to begin. I try a lot, and nothing works. And I finish there. F and G has what you want. The important point is that F tilde and G tilde are C1 close. So you can begin by F on G affine if you want. Oh yes, for C2 the Hausdorff dimension. What? In general, for C4, for the C2 topology, you cannot. It's not a problem of the differentiability of the map. The problem is what is the topology. So I finish here.